Hey, 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 Penguin Radio. This is DJ Throwback here on The Rewind at radio.dominican.edu. It is a beautiful Thursday night. Now, I have a few guests in studio here with me. I got the U-ster and DJ Shortstuff with me. So how you guys doing tonight? Say something to our lovely time travelers.
I'm doing pretty well here. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks. That was DJ Shortstuff. How about you, Euster?
Pretty energetic tonight. Ready to get it pumped up. How are you?
I'm doing quite all right. And it's a good night to be talking here on The Rewind. So we got for you our first segment called Then and Now. So in this first segment, we're going to talk about Britney Spears, guys. It's exciting stuff. So Britney was born Britney Jean Spears on December 12, 1981, in Macomb, Mississippi. She was raised in Kentwood, Louisiana, however, and she started dancing at the age of 3. That's coincidentally when I started dancing. I was 3 years old, too. Ballet, tap, all that fun stuff. So Britney started voice lessons around the age of 8. She was also a gymnast. It's another fun fact for you guys. So she auditioned for a Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, which was a Disney Channel show which featured kids singing and dancing with Mickey, and unfortunately did not receive a callback for her first audition. She was later enrolled at the Professional Performing Arts School in New York City, and she was hired to do her first musical called Ruthless. She was on the show called Star Search, just like our friend Usher, who we talked about last week, where she was picked up and was signed to a record label, and as well as received her finally callback from Mickey Mouse Clubhouse in 1992. So her family friend, entertainment lawyer Larry Rudolph, decided to start pitching her to record labels, and she was actually rejected 3 times. Crazy. I can't believe that. Until Jive Records signed her in 1992. She originally wanted a Sheryl Crow type of sound, but the record label actually was looking for more of a poppy type of dance music because Spears had dance experience. So she gave in and said, yeah, I can dance, so let's dance. In 1999, she released her first number one U.S. Billboard hit, Baby One More Time, in January, which went double platinum. She topped the charts in 15 countries and sold over 10 million copies. In 1999, she was on the cover of Rolling Stones for the first time, and she extended her world tour twice to reach all the way back into 2000. She is known for releasing 5 studio albums. All 5 have been at the number one spot on the Billboard charts, and she is the only artist in history as a female to hit all 5 albums in the number one spot ever. Well, Britney is an amazing singer, dancer, and performer. She came out with her second album, which was called Oops, I Did It Again, and it sold 1.3 million copies in 2000. Then she went on her Oops, I Did It Again tour, and after returning, she performed at the VMAs. She just gives and gives, performing constantly, Britney does. Now, here's where the juicy stuff comes in. She started dating Justin Timberlake of NSYNC in 2000. Now, her and JT were a hot and heavy item back then, and were very, very out there with publicity and all sorts of news. Paparazzi were following them everywhere. Her third album, called A Mother's Gift, was then later released that year. And she received her first promotional deal with Pepsi, where she danced on many different commercials and starred in them, as well as showcased her musical talents. So her third album hit, and her third single hit number one, called I'm a Slave for You. And so it was a, she then was later on the VMAs that year with Christina Aguilera and Madonna, which is where she and Christina both made out with Madonna on stage for that amazing show-stopping, crazy show ender. It was just insane. Nobody had seen anything like it on MTV, and it was just, it changed the entire way that people viewed pop stars. Sadly, after 3 years of dating Justin Timberlake, they broke up in 2002, where he wrote a song called Cry Me a River, which was reportedly written about Britney Spears. And in the music video, even, he featured a blonde who looked just like Britney. But Britney did not take that, and she retaliated with her own song called Every Time. And she rose back up to the top with her fourth studio album, which was the fourth one to hit top of the charts, with her hit Toxic, which is the single that had won her first Grammy. In 2004, she married Jason Alexander, which was her childhood friend, in Vegas. This is probably the second shortest wedding to Kim Kardashian. It lasted 54 hours, and she was annulled instead of divorced. She got her first marriage annulled. Later that year, she injured her knee in a music video shoot, and she actually had to have knee surgery, and sadly canceled the second end of her Onyx hotel tour. And later that year, in July, she became engaged to Kevin Federline, and they started their reality TV show called Britney and Kevin. They were married in September of 2004, and Britney then took a break from the spotlight and performing in order to start her family with K-Fed, as Kevin Federline is referred to. Then she released her first Greatest Hits album, which went double platinum, as well as all of her other four albums that she released previously. And in September of 2005, Kevin and her welcomed their first child, a baby boy named Sean. She then released a remix album, and that sold over 1 million copies. In February of 2006, this is where the scandal starts. Paparazzi spotted Britney Spears driving with her son Sean on her lap, and she had received many problems with court and almost had her poor son taken from her, but she claimed it was because of the scary encounter she was having with the paparazzi and that it was completely her mistake. Well, Britney, we all make mistakes, and all I can say is you could have taken 5 minutes to strap the kid into the back seat. Sorry. In 2006, she gave birth to her second son. And she, in 2007, divorced Kevin Federline. And they had shared joint custody of their two sons. Britney then went into rehab later that year, where she was released the next day. And the classic story scandal of Britney shaving her head was released. Later that year, she lost physical custody of her sons, which means that she could not physically have them in her house and or living with her, but she did have visitation rights. She then released her fifth studio album, which was the last one to hit top of the charts on the Billboard for the top spot. And where she performed her single Give Me More and at the MTV VMAs that year. In January of 2008, she refused to give Kevin Federline complete and full custody of her sons. But she still had no legal right to keep them with her. And later that year, she sadly lost full custody of her kids. In 2008, she released her sixth album called Circus. And that's featured three singles, Circus, Womanizer, and If You Seek Amy, which was a great revival for Britney after we saw her scary shaved head that past year. But the blonde locks grew back and she came right back with an amazing number two hit on the Billboard charts. Her seventh album came out, which was a female Femme Fatale. And that had about two hits on there, one with Will.i.am. In May 2002, she replaced Nicole Scherzinger as a judge on The X Factor and joined Demi Lovato and Simon Cowell as judges on that show, and released her eighth studio album, which was number four at the charts. Britney has been on the top three or four spots every time she releases an album. It's amazing. People just love it. Today, she's released her ninth studio album. One more from 10, Brit. Come on. In September of 2014. Wow, Britney has sure done a lot, don't you think, guys?
Definitely.
For sure.
Yeah. So what do you guys think of the whole head-shaving scandal?
I remember when it came out, like, I honestly didn't care. It's like, okay, cool, okay, bye.
You didn't really have a yay or no say to it. You were just like, well, Britney's done something else scandalous and crazy.
It's like too late. Sherry shaved her head, so it's like nothing you can do about it.
It grows back its hair. It's not like she cut off a finger.
Exactly.
What do you have to say, Easter?
I mean, I thought it was like a moment of like weakness, but at the same time, like, she showed how strong she came back from it. So, I mean, that's what you do. You just come back strong.
Definitely. I agree with you on that. She definitely came back and was just like, I am a strong, independent woman. I'm good at what I do, and I'm going to make my fans happy and hopefully gain the ones I lost back. So, I'm gonna play you one of Britney's songs as we take our first break here. I am DJ Throwback. This is The Rewind. My next segment's called I Played With That, where we'll be talking about toys that kids played with back in the 90s when I was a kid and early 2000s. So I'm going to play you some Britney. This song is called Crazy. This is radio.dominican.edu at Penguin Radio here. We'll be right back after this short break.
What can I do? Baby, you spin me
welcome back, time travelers. This is DJ Throwback here with Rewind. I'm going to start off my second segment with my friends Short Stuff and the Euster. We're going to talk about some toys. The segment is called I Played With That. So the first toy we're going to talk about is a Bop-It. Now, I'm sure you all have heard what a Bop-It is. And for those of you who don't know what a Bop-It is, I'll tell you. Bop-It was made in 1996 by Hasbro. It started off with just three features: the Bop-It middle button, twist it on the side, and pull it on the other. That's it. And it had three playable ways: solo bop, box bop, and beep bop. Each of them had a different feature. The solo bop was for one player, and it had a it would talk to you. It'd say, "All right, bop it," and you'd have to push the button to bop it or twist it, pull it, etc. Box bop just made the noise, and you were just you had to figure out which noise it makes. It would go bop it. It'd sound like a drum. Twist it like a wrench. Pull it, kind of like a swing or something. Then they came out with the Bop-It I played with in 1998, which was called the Bop-It Extreme. It had four different features: the pull it, bop it, twist it, flick it, and spin it. Excuse me, five features. And it also came with a vox bop, beep bop, vox bop solo, and beep bop solo. So it came with the new party features where you can play against people and it would say pass it or anything like that. So it was a very competitive and classic party game, and the competition was fierce. So, Euster, what do you think of Bop-It? Did you play with it as a kid?
I definitely did. It was a really fun game. It was really frustrating, though, when you tried to beat your score over and over again. I remember, I had the one with where it was available to play with multiple players. My brother, my mom, and my dad, we would get in a circle and try to play against each other, and it got intense where we were like, "Ha, you got eliminated," and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember playing with my family too. We'd get pretty intensely into it. We'd all be battling over which was better. Sometimes it would be kids versus parents, and it would get crazy and grummy. We'd be like, "All right, if we beat you, you have to let us eat ice cream at 10 o'clock at night." And our parents were like, "If we beat you, you'd have to do chores or something," you know? It's kind of something cool like that. What about you, Short Stuff? You ever play with a Bop-It?
Yeah, but I don't think I didn't know about it until middle school or elementary school. So it was a bit like a
late bloomer on the Bop-It phase.
Yep.
That's all right. I mean, I think I still have my Bop-It. That thing is over 11 years old, and it's still
overused and alive.
Yeah, it's still alive. I think it's sitting in my room now, but it's a great game. I remember watching some TV shows where they'd bring out the Bop-It as a kind of an icebreaker game where you'd play with other people.
Yeah, those things definitely last a long time. I think I have mine on my bedside too. It's just laying there. And I actually, when I went on winter break, I, found it. I was like, wow. And I turned it on. It was still working. It was intense.
I know. It's the toy that just never dies, like the Furbies we talked about last week. I mean, those, I don't know what they put in batteries when we were young, but they last forever. I feel like batteries nowadays don't last as long, and it's crazy. But Bop-It is definitely a fun toy. I loved it. I used to play it all the time. I'd get bored and be on my Bop-It. Whereas now, today, kids are like, "Oh, I'm bored. I'm going to play Candy Crush or something dumb on their phone," or, you know, totally go into their own antisocial world. Which the great thing I liked about having a Bop-It, though, was that you can play against other people. And so I feel like as a generation, we weren't as antisocial when we were kids as the kids are today. What do you guys, have any more things to say about a Bop-It?
Not really.
No? What about you?
I mean, no, I think everything about it was, a really cool game overall.
Hell yeah, it was. It was a really cool game. I loved my Bop-It.
pretty addicting.
I may just bring it over here after spring break next week. I'm going home, so maybe I'll bring my Bop It back and we can have a competition.
We should. Game on.
Ooh.
Do it on the radio.
Challenge accepted, guys. All right. Maybe next time we'll actually play with the Bop It and see what happens, or we'll fill you guys in on the competition. So we're going to move on to the next toy that we talk about. It's going to be a Nintendo 64. So Nintendo 64 was released actually by Nintendo in the U.S. in September of 1996. It was their third video game console. The most popular game on the Nintendo 64 was Super Mario 64, which featured a little go-kart race game that kids could play, and it featured only up to four players. It's nothing like the Wii of today, let me tell you. That thing can hold up to eight players on their Super Mario 8 party go-kart race. The one thing I do remember about having a Nintendo 64 was you always had to blow into the console in order to get the dust out. I see Short Stuff shaking her head going, yeah, you definitely do. You'd either have to blow on the console and see if it worked that way, and if it didn't, you'd have to blow on the actual game itself, because what happened was the console has a little gap on the top, which is where you insert the game onto it, and the game is read like that. Not like today where you have disc or everything is on the cloud. Ooh, it's like magic today. You know, you click a button and something happens. Back then, it was all hands-on, and if that thing didn't work, you had to go find a grubby little screwdriver or a butter knife and open that thing and practically perform surgery to get it to work. Whereas now, you're like, Dad, the Wi-Fi's out. The internet's broken. I don't know what to do with my Wii. Back then, you were on your own. You either banged on the side of the TV or you opened up the Nintendo 64 and just performed a little bit of surgery to see what would happen and what would work. And when that little tune came on from the Nintendo, it was the happiest day of your life because you had just revived your favorite video game. So did you guys have a Nintendo 64s? Do you play with them ever?
I never had one, but I remember when we had it at school, like at the after school daycare, they had it. It was like always, there's always a line like, okay, it's your turn next. And like there's a list and everything, but it was totally worth it.
Yeah, it was a fun game. I remember my aunt had one, and me and my cousins, every Christmas, that's what we'd do, waiting for midnight to hit in order to open gifts. We'd play Super Mario Kart for hours. And since there was more than four of us, we'd have to take our turns and wait in line. But in the end, it really was worth it. What about you, Euster?
I actually had a hand-me-down one. So my cousins had it first, so like, because they're like 3 years older. So we got to play with them first. Like when everyone went to their house at Christmas, they were like playing it and we played it with them. We were playing like Pokemon Coliseum. It was actually, I think it was a cooler version than like the Pokemon games they have here sometimes. You got to like random Pokeballs and you like battle each other with these random cool Pokemon. And then after like they got upgraded to a GameCube, they gave us that, so we were like super excited, and we have that. I think we have it at our home right now, sitting there.
Wow, yeah. I remember GameCube, you mentioned that. I have mine still sitting at home too. I loved that thing. Mine was pretty cool because it came with like little compartment where you could put your Game Boy games in, and I talked about Game Boy last week, and Pokemon was the game to play.
I think Pokemon is still the game to play. I mean, they're making all these new upgrades, like Mega and Super Powers now these days, and like Shiny. It's like intense how like Pokemon has. There was like 151 at our time, like 150 plus the extra Pokemon they just introduced randomly, and then they just got all upgraded on everything else.
Yeah, Pokemon is definitely one of those things that like will live long and prosper. It's crazy how much kids love Pokemon still to this day. I remember when I was like 5 or 6 years old sitting there watching Pokemon going, this is the coolest thing ever. I want all of them. You know, you gotta catch them all.
Right? Yeah. I think the phrase gotta catch them all is the true thing.
Definitely. Alright. So, similar to the Nintendo 64 is the Sega game console. That one is a little older than the Nintendo 64. And it was made in Hawaii. The first one was actually made in 1940. It's this big old machine about the size of of a small breakfast cabinet in your kitchen. It's a big console, and they used to have little games on there where you can shoot at little targets. And the most recent Sega game that was released was in 1982. And that one was called the Sega Genesis, excuse me. So the Sega Genesis, that was actually the first video game console my parents ever had. It was very similar to the Nintendo 64, where you had to blow on the console to get it to work, and if it wasn't working, it was like, oh, this is a pain. Time to go get the knife and fix it. But my favorite game to play on that was Sonic the Hedgehog. I loved Sonic. Literally was the best thing. It was either that or football, because those were the only two games that my parents had. But, you know, I was a girl. I liked Sonic. Football was like a whole other world to me. Now, I love football, so it's a total twist about what happened with me. But what about you guys? Did you guys know anything about a Sega?
Oh, yeah. I like the Sega games. They're so fun. Just watching it, and then And when you hit, like, a spike or something, then all the rings fall out.
Yeah. And
different modes.
What about you, Euster?
I actually never played Sega. I think I was so focused on my, like, Nintendo 64 and my GameCube that I never played Sega. That's so weird.
Yeah, it's an older version of a Nintendo 64, so I don't think it was all as popular as Nintendo's 64 was, and, like, GameCube. That stuff was a lot more mainstream than a Sega. Maybe we were just a little too young for that. He may have missed it by a generation. Like I said, I only had one because my parents did. Many kids our age probably don't know what that is because they think, oh, it's the older version of a Nintendo 64. So, any other toys you guys can think of that you played with as kids?
Definitely a lot of toys.
I know.
Our generation was definitely the toy generation because they were inventing so many different games. Like, I believe, like, I know the Game of Life was a big thing when playing. And then they've upgraded that. And then, like, definitely the old original version of Monopoly, that's, like, old times.
Everything. Twister.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are talking board games. Ooh, those are fun. I love board games.
Do you remember, what's that one, like, where there's a timer and you have to pick up
all the different... Oh, Perfection.
Oh, until it pops.
Perfection was the best. My brother got that, but I was a little older when we got Perfection in our house. But the Game of Life, that is my family's game. We absolutely love playing the Game of Life.
I remember that game. I hated it because it seemed so long, like Monopoly, but I didn't mind it as much compared to Monopoly.
Yeah, Monopoly lasted for like days.
Yeah.
Weeks. Oh my gosh. I remember my brother and I would bring Monopoly to my grandma's house because my grandma didn't have like great TV. She had like six channels, and we would get bored. Like, PBS was like out sometimes, and the only shows that good on PBS at the time were like Dragon Tales and other like shows. Mm-hmm. So that's what we played, like Monopoly for days.
Yeah, Monopoly for days. Seriously, that is the game that never ends. Me and my grandma, my mom, and my cousin, we sat there for about 4 hours the other day playing Monopoly, and even then, we were like, we can't do this anymore. We just had to call it. Whoever had the most money was it. Four hours is a long time to play a board game.
I wonder if anyone's ever finished the game of that. Because we usually stop. Because, like, now it's getting too long. We need to stop.
Yeah, I know. It's the game that never ends. Just like Bop-Its never die and Furbies never die. All right, so that's pretty much going to tie up our second segment here at on the Rewind. This is a DJ Throwback. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'm going to put some old music on for you. We're going to listen to some of The Cure here on radio.dominican.edu. We'll be right back after this quick break. All right, and we're back here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I'm here with my friends DJ Shortstuff and the Euster. Now, we're getting ready for our third segment here. It's called Bring It Back. In this segment, we'll be talking about some TV shows and movies that we needed to, or we, I feel, that they need to bring back to TV today. So, the first show we're going to talk about is called Full House. Now, it was set in San Francisco, and the whole plot line is a newly widowed Danny Tanner. He asked his best friend Joey Gladstone and his brother-in-law Jesse Katsopoulos to move in and help raise his three daughters, DJ, Stephanie, and Michelle. The show aired in 1987 and lasted all the way to 1995. 8 seasons it ran. So everybody I know has watched at least an episode of Full House. Everybody knows the Olsen twins were Michelle. They all just absolutely love it. It's that classic family show that's funny and quirky and just grabs everybody's attention. It's like, oh, it brings you back to home. It touches the heart every time you watch an episode. So, and the catchphrase, of course, is, you got it, dude. Little Michelle was, that was her little catchphrase with her uncle Jesse. So what did you guys think of Full House? Did you guys watch it as kids?
Oh yeah, pretty much like wholeheartedly. Just, I didn't like the way it ended. It's like, it felt so cut short. It's like, why?
Yeah, when TV shows end, it's the worst. You feel like, oh, part of your heart has gone with the show.
Like, you don't know what to do with your life now.
Yeah, what about you, Euster?
I definitely grew up with Full House. It was a good show. I definitely could connect to a lot of the characters, especially the older sister being an older brother, having to like deal with sharing a room and everything like that. And like being told you're supposed to be the responsible one was definitely a phrase. I think you could connect with that too, Liz,
yeah.
An older sibling.
I definitely can. I remember having to help my younger brother a lot and, you know, just be there for him whenever he needed me. And Stephanie and DJ's relationship kind of reminds me a little bit of my brother and me. They fought like cat and dog when they were younger, and then they started getting along when we were older. That perfectly describes me and my brother's relationship now. What do you guys think? Little Michelle, she was always the little cutie.
She was definitely the little cutie. She was so funny, and I remember when she was still like starting as a baby in the show, and then she grew up, and it was so weird. It's like watching like your childhood grow up, like you were growing up with the mm-hmm. whole show. You were growing up with the show in the way.
Yeah.
And like when they got Comet too, I was like, oh my god, I wanted a dog. I remember begging my parents, I'm like, I want a dog too. Like the Tanner family has a dog. If the Tanner family has a dog, we should have a dog.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think we got our first dog was a golden retriever, and the moment I saw her, I saw him, I was just like, the Tanners have this dog. I mean, you know, Comet was a golden. Our first dog, his name was Hunter. He was a golden. It just made sense. Classic American family, you know, golden retriever dog. It sounds really corny now when I say it out loud, but it's honestly, it's true. What are you thinking over there, Shortstaff?
I'm just laughing at the commentary. For some reason, like all I could like pop into my head about the whole Full House was with how many rooms they had.
Yeah,
it's like, how can they fit so many people? That like, because San Francisco is kind of like a bit compacted, so to have that many rooms to fit that many people, especially in San Francisco, is a miracle.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I always wondered how their house was so big when, you know, we've been into the city together, and those houses look like they're pretty crammed. I don't know.
Being from the city, they were living in one of the Victorian houses. Actually, I think one of my friends was the owner of the house that they borrowed.
Wow.
So, yeah, I think they went to Sacred Heart, the people that owned the house. I don't know the whole backstory. Maybe it was friends of the Sacred Heart person, but I definitely heard that someone near in my school or someone's friend was the owner of their actual house, which is pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
That's connections.
Yeah, right? Big history. It's all about making connections here. So, yeah.
Being from the city, like, I definitely understand it's really cramped houses, but the Victorian houses, those are huge. I mean, they were made for the victors of whatever competition stuff, so yeah. Supposedly.
Wow. It's, the more you know, man. It's crazy here. On Penguin Radio, listening to everybody's feedback and stories about their childhood experience with Full House. Now, I'm going to talk to you guys about a film, actually, a film saga that I think really outlines the entirety of my show, and it's called Back to the Future. Back to the Future is a 1985 science fiction film starring Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, Crispin Glover, and Thomas F. Wilson. It revolves around the life of Marty McFly, and he's a teen that grew up in the 80s, and he's sent back to 1955 to help his parents fall in love because they're in jeopardy of never getting together and completely getting rid of his existence. When he goes back to 1955, however, his mother accidentally falls in love with him. Awkward. So, he's got to try to figure out how to make his mother not love him, but love his father-to-be in order to save his future. With the help of his trusty friend Doc Brown, he travels in the DeLorean back to 1955, and he returns to 1985 safe and sound with his future intact. Now at the end of the film, they go into detail about the future a little bit and say Marty's got to go into the future this time and help his kids who are in trouble, which is the opening for the second film, where Marty travels to the year 2015, which we're currently in right now. So when Marty gets there, there's a hoverboards, which is like a skateboard, but it hovers, you know? Shoes that tie themselves, which would be totally convenient, I think. And flying cars. Who doesn't want a flying car? So, where did they even come up with this predictive stuff? What do you guys think?
I have no idea.
Would you want to ride around campus on a hoverboard?
It's a lot easier than learning how to skateboard.
Right.
What about shoes that tie themselves? What do you guys think of shoes that tie themselves?
There are alternatives called slip-on shoes.
Yeah. My Vans will last.
You guys are like, oh, Toms. You know, we have Toms. We have shoes without laces now. Well, funny story, actually. The shoes that were modeled in Back to the Future, the shoes that tie themselves, Nike came out with a shoe that looked just like it later in the 90s. And it was, they called them the Air McFlies because they resembled the shoes. And people were like, oh, if only they tied themselves, you know, then it would be the perfect shoe. Look at Nike just doing it.
Yeah, I think actually Nike was introducing another new shoe in a commercial just the other day. So with Back to the Future, so it's pretty cool. Like the regular actor, he like was advertising for them.
Michael J. Fox. Yeah, I saw that commercial. That was pretty cool. It's kind of crazy how things are coming back and Back to the Future. Hello.
Puns everywhere.
All right. The flying car, actually, another fun fact. They actually made a prototype in 2013 for the first flying car. I don't think it's ready for the market yet. So,
but most likely for billionaires.
Yeah, if they can make a flying car, why not come out with a hoverboard first?
I know. Start small, then go big.
Yeah, but I guess they were looking for the more go big or go home type of thing, you know?
Definitely.
Or they're hiding all the hoverboards from us.
Ooh, scandal. All right. You guys want to know something, actually?
What?
The director hated shooting the future.
What?
Right? Crazy. He hated movies that predict the future. The only movie the director actually liked that predicted the future was The Clockwork Orange. Insane.
That's Who's crazy. Heard
was that?
Yeah, it was totally crazy. He's like, I hate this. I don't want to predict the future. films that predict the future always are wrong.
Then why'd you make the movie?
Hey, money, man. It's Hollywood business. You know, he had to stick with, I think he stuck with the whole Back to the Future franchise. They had the same director all the way through. But they kind of had to go because they ended the last movie in 2015. Going back, you know, to the future, they kind of needed to keep with that. I just thought it was pretty funny that the director did not like these scenes. And when he was asked about it, he was like, you know, the most archaic and randomest things that I could find pretty much was what I picked. Anything else you guys want to say about Back to the Future or Full House?
Well,
you should. I probably should rewatch Full House. I feel like our friend group, we should all
watch a marathon.
Yeah, Full House marathon.
Full House
marathon. I'm down.
Yeah, because I feel like as I got older, I relate to Joey more.
Because he's such a lazy bum, like us kids.
No, it's like hockey. Like, I had no idea what he was wearing. Didn't understand it. Just like went with it. Like, okay, now I just understand it. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I totally understand that, guys. It's kind of funny.
Is there a BuzzFeed quiz for that? I want to take that.
BuzzFeed has everything from back in the day, man. Everything is relatable now. It's crazy what they're bringing back. But what about this idea of hoverboards and shoes that tie themselves, flying cars? When do you guys think they'll come out with those kind of things?
Probably by the time we're like 30 or 40.
Really? You think when they're 30 or 40, they're going to have hoverboards and flying cars?
Well, the flying car is definitely in 34s, but hoverboards, like mid-20s.
We're almost mid-20s. That's insane. I'm thinking more like they're going to come out with them after, sadly, we're dead. But I like your optimism.
Yes.
Way to go, short stuff on that one. What about you, Easter?
I think that there's a possibility that hoverboards were made by now, I feel. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, for real, they have been hiding them. Because I see them on, like, TV shows. There was a competition, actually, for high school kids to try to make one. Oh. So I think that there's definitely a possibility that they've either been made or they're in the making to be safer.
Maybe hiding Area 51.
Area 51, the place of many secrets.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's all for that segment. We're going to take another short break here on The Rewind with DJ Throwback. All right. This is radio.dominican.edu. We're going to take you guys back with another song here. It's the ones from Pussycat Dolls. Enjoy. And we'll be right back.
Yeah. Are we about to get it just a little hot and sweaty in this?
Ooh, baby.
Ladies, let's go. Soldiers, let's
Dolls.
Go. Let me talk to y'all and just, you know, give you a little situation. Listen. You see the get hot every time I come through. When I step up in the spot, make the place sizzle like a summertime cookout. Proud for the best chick. Yes, I'm on a lookout. So banging, shorty like a belly dancer with it. Smell good, pretty skin, so gangster with it. No tricks, only diamonds under my sleeve. Give me the number, but make sure you holler before you leave.
I know you like me.
I know you like me.
I know you do.
I know you do.
That's why whenever I come around, she's all over you. I know you want it.
I know you want it.
It's easy to see.
It's easy to see.
And in the back of your mind, I know you should be on with me. Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me? Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like me? Don't you? Don't you? Don't you wish your girlfriend was raw like me? Don't you wish your girlfriend was fun like me? Don't you? Don't you?
Fight the feeling.
Fight the feeling.
Leave it alone.
Leave it alone.
Cause if it ain't love, it just ain't enough to leave a happy home.
Let's keep it friendly.
You have to play fair. See, I don't care, but I know she ain't gonna want to share.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me?
Don't you wish your girlfriend was raw like me? Don't you wish your girlfriend was fun like me? Don't you?
Okay, I see how it's going down.
Don't you?
Seem like shorty want a little menage to pop off or something. Well, let me get straight to it, a broad won't watch it. When I come through, it's the God Almighty looking all brand new. A shorty wanna jump in my Aston Van Jewish. Looking at me all like she really wanna do it. Try to put it on me till my black and bluish. You wanna play with a player girl and play on? Trip out the Chanel and leave the lingerie on. Watch me and I'ma watch you at the same time. Looking like you won't break my back. You're the very reason why I keep a pack of the Magnum. And with the wagon, hit you in the back of the Magnum. For the record, don't think it was something you did. Shorty all on me cause it's hard to resist the kid. I got an idea that's dope for y'all as y'all can get cool. So I can hit the phone for y'all.
I know she loves you.
I know she loves you.
I understand.
I understand.
I'd probably be just as crazy about you if you were my old man. Maybe next lifetime.
Welcome back, time travelers. This is DJ Throwback here on radio.dominican.edu. So, we talked about Full House, Back to the Future, Bop It, Nintendo 64, Britney Spears. Now, we're going to get into my fourth and final segment called This Was My Jam. So, in this segment, my first artist on display is Hilary Duff. So, Hilary Duff, what do you guys think? You remember her?
Oh, yeah.
She was the homegirl.
The main blondie, right? Yeah. Lizzie McGuire, Cadet Kelly, all those. She was a great actress and a pretty damn good singer, too, don't you think?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Grew up on her.
All right. So, she had released 3 albums. Her first one's called Metamorphosis. Her second one is a self-titled album, Hilary Duff. And her third album was called Free Fallen. So, the first song I'm going to play for you guys was released in 2004 on her self-titled album called Hilary Duff. This song is called Fly, and one of the main songs that I remember in this, or one of the main lines, excuse me, lyrics I remember in this song was, let go of your yesterday. I feel like that spoke to a lot of girls back when we were like 8 years old, when we'd mess something up or do something that you're just like, oh, I messed up. This is the worst. Everybody's gonna hate me for it. I'm so embarrassed. And when I listened to this song, I was like, you know what? Forget everything. Let go of it. I'm a new person tomorrow. Everything is going to change within a day. Do you guys, like, remember this song at all?
I'll remember once I hear it. Because right now it's not.
All right. Maybe I'll ask you. Let me see. I'll play this song for you guys right now. And then we'll talk about it a little bit after. So here's Fly by Hilary Duff.
Can you feel it in your soul? Can you?
And that was Hillary Duff's Fly. I'm going to leave that on in the background. So, Short Stuff, do you remember that song?
Yes, I do. It was like one of her most hardcore like songs back then.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree with you. I do love the song, though, Come Clean. I'm going to play that in the background.
Who doesn't love that song?
Yeah, I'm going to play that one in the background next. It's a great song.
All her songs, you just kind of want to sing with it.
Yeah, it's definitely a sing-along song. I know when we were on that little small break there, we were definitely singing along. I just remember watching the music video to this, and the rain was coming down, and you're just like, I want to cry.
Wasn't it the same time that Cinderella Story came out?
Yes, that's so right.
It's like, it looks, it's parallel.
Yeah, Cinderella Story was the movie Hilary Duff starred in, and she played like a Cinderella type of character, but a modern day version, so... For those of you who haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it. It's a chick flick. If you're not into that thing, well, then don't see it. But if you're into that and you like Hillary Duff's sound, totally listen to it or watch it. It's amazing. All right, so we're going to be out of here in about 3 more minutes. So I'm going to probably hop on to our final song of the night. And a new band that's coming up. My second artist of choice was the Plain White Tees. Now, the Plain White Tees started in 1997, and they are awesome. I'm going to play you one of their songs right now, which is one of my personal favorites. It's called Hey There, Delilah. See if you remember this.
Delilah, what's it like in New York City? I'm 1,000 miles away, but girl, tonight you look so pretty. Yes, you do. Times Square can shine as bright as you. I swear it's true. Hey there, Delilah, don't you worry about the distance. I'm right there if you get lonely. Give this song another listen. Close your eyes. Listen to my voice, it's my disguise. I'm by your side. Oh, it's what you do to me. 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 What you do to me. Delilah, I know times are getting hard, but just believe me, girl, someday I'll pay the bills with this guitar. We'll have it good. We'll have the life we knew we would. My word is good. there, Delilah. I've got so much left to say. If every simple song I wrote to you would take your breath away, I'd write it all. Even more in love with me.
All right, those are the Plain White Tees right here. I'm going to play them low for us. So what do you guys, you remember the Plain White Tees?
Definitely.
I loved this song and I tried to learn it on the guitar and everything.
Yeah, Plain White Tees were awesome. I remember they were like the major ballads of our time. But this one, I think a song everybody knows. So I'm sorry, but this is all the time we have. I'm going to play you this last Plain White Tees song at the end of this radio show here. This has been The Rewind here with DJ Throwback. Thank you, Short Stuff and Euster, for coming on. So this is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Tune in Monday nights from 8 to 9 to hear my regular showtime. And we'll see you later. Have a great night, guys. Here's some more Plain White Tea.
There will be no rules tonight.